Deborah Shapiro, your host for Cooks and Books here on the Heritage Radio Network. And our sponsor today is Hearst Ranch. And we're very excited. Today we've got Chef Courtney Contost as our guest. And for Chef Courtney, her love affair with all things culinary began at a very young age. And nothing stopped her from exploring all facets of the culinary world. And I had the pleasure of meeting Chef Contost when I was publishing the first winter issue of Edible Green Mountains, and she contributed some recipes for me, and I still get comments. That was over 2.5 years ago, and I still get emails and comments about people who love her recipes, and she's evolved a great deal since then and has some very exciting things she's doing in the culinary world. So I'd like to welcome her. Welcome, Chef Contost.
Thank you for having me on the show. What fun.
And I thought we'd start by helping people understand a little bit about your great culinary background. I think it's always fun to know where that comes from. And then we'll just keep talking, and I think there's a lot of things we can share with our listeners today.
Absolutely. Well, I'm from Chicago.
Right.
And since I can remember, my family had restaurants, lots of them in Chicago. Shape Hall, we had for 50 years, and some people might remember the restaurant because it was in the Blues Brothers and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So, you know, Abe Froman, the Sausage King, that whole scene took place at my dad's restaurant. Actually, when they were filming Ferris Bueller's, you know, there was press and trailers and the restaurant was closed. And, you know, I always went there after school. So I go to the restaurant and Dad, what's going on? And he's like, whatever, you know, just, he's, you know, true Greek. He just was like, he wasn't into, you know, all the hype, you know. And sure enough, then the movie came out and it got so popular and we all loved it. And I was like, oh, are you serious? You know, like, could have met the cast and mingled with them. But so we had Shape Hall for 50 years. My grandfather started it. He was straight off the boat from Greece, and he had a fruit cart, an ice cream parlor, and then from there went to fine dining French food.
Wow.
I have no idea how that happened.
So was he actually the chef, or hired chef?
No, back then, at least those days with the French food scene, you hired your chefs from France and brought them over. So,
Jean, he was the front of the house? Sorry to interrupt.
He was the entrepreneur, you know, uh-huh. The welcome home. You know, that's what he would say to his guests when they walked in, welcome home.
Huh.
He was the owner. And then we had the chef world was so different back then, you know. But these chefs would come over from France. They didn't speak much English. You know, the stories were endless. There were parties. Those were the 60s and the 50s. But I would go there every week for lunch, and I was allowed to bring 3 girlfriends. And we had outdoor lunch at my grammar school, which I don't think is very common now, but you could go walk, you know, to anywhere you wanted for lunch. So we would get picked up, and we had 1 hour, and we would go there, and generally we had steak with bordelaise sauce and these little fancy potatoes that now I teach my students how to make. And then we would have bananas Foster.
Every day for lunch.
Once a week we would go.
Well,
I would go a lot more, but once a week I could bring my girlfriend.
Bring your friends.
And the bananas Foster, as you know, has some, you know, booze in it. And so we, you know, even though it's a couple tablespoons, we would go back, oh, we're so buzzed.
Pretty relaxed.
Yeah, we're loopy from the bananas Foster. We had great fun. So that's where, you know, my love affair with food began growing up at the restaurant.
It was you allowed in the kitchen?
I was.
You were.
Yeah. And Maria, she was the, you know, garmage cook, you know, and so she would make my salads and knew just how I liked them. And I didn't realize until culinary school how, you know, detailed and annoying it is to segment a grapefruit. But I remember being very young ordering bowls of these, like, segmented pieces of fruit, not realizing, oh, gosh, she probably was cursing me at nighttime. But
so what does someone do for because everything was so special for the everyday. I can't imagine what an occasion would have been like.
Mm-hmm.
How did you distinguish occasions?
Well, my family cooked a lot. So we had big dinner parties and, you know, That was it. I mean, there was always the fine china and the nice silver and the great food and the good company. But we didn't celebrate a lot at the restaurant because we were there, you know, visiting my dad, who was always there. But, you know, we had grand dinner parties at home.
And with the Greek background, how is it that French food became what your grandfather wanted to focus on?
I don't know. That's just one of those questions. It was a deal someone gave him, you know, and it just worked out. You know, the restaurant was there, and it was a big scene at that time in Chicago where the French restaurants were just popping up. And actually, there's a gentleman who just contacted me because he's doing a whole, you know, recording from way back when, all the French restaurants in Chicago now on this blog, because there were so many. So there you go, the Greeks, you know, leave it to the Greeks to run the French restaurant. But we also had a Mexican restaurant, Maison de Lago. And let's see, we had a creperie, too, the Flying Frenchman.
And all of these were in downtown Chicago?
All downtown Chicago, and probably still remembered today by the locals in the city. So I went to restaurant management school because I instantly thought, oh, I'm going to open my own restaurant. I'm going to love this. This is what I'm going to do. Well, the restaurant management school happened to be a culinary school as well, which commonly they are. And right. So after that two-year program, I went straight into culinary school.
And that was at Kendall College?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And I did an internship at Charlie Trotter's.
Which, for everybody listening, they know that had to be unbelievable.
I mean, call it the culinary military.
The culinary military. And tell us a little bit about what that environment was
well,
like.
Well, at Charlie Trotter's, you show up around 1 on a good day, and you're there until about 2:30
a.m. In the morning,
And, you know, you're polishing the copper, and he has this lovely Bonnet stove, you know, shipped whole from France. It's a beautiful stove. If you have a chance to go there and enjoy his food, you can have a kitchen tour. But we would one of the last things we would do is polish the stove, buff the brass, and then go over it with a Q-tip. This was every night. This wasn't just Saturday special cleanup. This was every night. So, and then polishing the copper. But the ingredients were unbelievable. You know, they were just, and farmers showing up with whole pigs and eggs and, you know, people dropping off salad greens. You didn't see that back then a lot.
And when was that?
That was about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So that really was the emerging part of this whole farm-to-table movement. And how, because he's so iconic. I mean, and when you talk about the military, clearly that discipline is key. But what were some of the other learnings that you took away from that? I mean, because you're probably not using a Q-tip when you clean your own stove every night, but I bet it's fair to say you probably brought a level or a standard to your own environment.
That's a great question. The attention to detail and the level of focus, you know, hasn't left me still, you know, just the attention to detail, and wow, you know, that place was really intense, and they notice everything there, you know, anything, you know, crumb on the corner, someone's going to clean it up within 5 minutes, even in the kitchen, so, but just appreciating and respecting the ingredients. It was the first place I worked where they just were, you know, they were the showcase. You know, they weren't scallops packed in some little container. You know, they were real shells coming in that we would clean, you know. And so the ingredients were respected, and still to this day. I mean, that's how I think of food.
And even more since than culinary school, it sounds
like. Even more. And actually, when I went back to culinary school, because my internship was in the middle, oh, gosh. I mean, no one, I think all the teachers, you know, not all of them, but I definitely know that I had an attitude that probably wasn't, you know, they weren't fond of, because I was like, what's this? You know, and that was one of the things, the scallops, you know, I'm so used to scallops coming a certain way at, you know, the restaurant. And then, so the level of quality at culinary school was much different. And I definitely went back and I had some teachers looking at me the wrong way, you know.
Well, and it's interesting because now I know, and we will get later in the show to more about your current cooking,
mm-hmm.
but I hadn't realized that it was informed that early,
mm-hmm.
you know, the real, your respect for ingredients and how when you teach, you really bring that into it. We take it for granted now, but
mm-hmm.
really, as you're saying, then that was not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Things came pasteurized
mm-hmm.
and pre-sorted and, you know, not anything like they can be today.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And then did you go back into your family's restaurants after that? After
No. After that, let's see. I went back to Trotters. I have to think back now. I went back to Trotters after culinary school. I was offered a job, a paid job, which was wonderful.
That had to be exciting.
And I spent time there in his kitchen as a lot of the chefs are tournant chefs, so you float around to each station.
Uh-huh.
So if someone doesn't show or, you know, one station gets busier, you can just jump in. So I work at about, I think, 80% of the stations.
Which is sort of like deepening the bench, right?
Mm-hmm.
We think in sports about
mm-hmm.
people who can play a lot of positions.
Mm-hmm.
Is that unique for a kitchen?
I believe so. Maybe in some of the smaller kitchens it's more common, but we were 18 in a kitchen. We were 18 chefs or bodies. Maybe
mm-hmm.
they weren't all chefs. But as soon as what's interesting about Charlie Trotter is not to talk about him for so long, but, I mean, I certainly respect him still, is as soon as you became comfortable in your station, as soon as you were like, I got it, and you were not allowed to show up early,
because uh-huh.
one time I did, and I was asked to sit outside. They don't ever want you to be in a comfort zone, so you're uh-huh. constantly challenged. And as soon as you're like, oh, I'm set up on time, I feel good, I have, you know, 30 seconds to drink a glass of water, the next day you're somewhere else.
And,
you know, it's just, how did they know? How did they know that?
Wow.
It's a really special experience for me. And I won Internship of the Year Award, which I felt that I really deserved.
Well, that's amazing.
It was hard work.
Well, and it really explains a lot of now, like I said, how you teach and some of what you're doing
mm-hmm.
and what you've brought to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you left Trotters eventually because now you're no longer in Chicago.
Right. Now we're in Vermont. I started my own private chef business because at that time there weren't a lot of restaurants where you could go that had the same level of quality.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I'm just going to do this on my own. I'm going to prepare private upscale dinner parties in people's homes nationwide. So I would travel to your home and you're going to have, you know, your friends over for dinner, and I show up with groceries about, you know, 3 hours before the guests arrive, and I just cook everything from scratch right there. Bread, cakes, everything. And
wow.
would show up with the finest ingredients.
And how did you find your clients? How did you find
it? Was word of mouth. It was
all
word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of regulars, and I did that for years and years. And then I started teaching people how to cook, and that just, you know, I did one demo once, and I loved it. I had so much fun, and then I incorporated the teaching, also going into people's homes, and I taught people how to cook full time for about 7 years now, maybe 8 years, and I've always had my hands in a lot of things. At the same time, I was producing a culinary segment for the culinary school in Chicago on WGN, so
uh-huh.
which it's amazing how it takes almost 24 hours for 2 minutes of TV. You know, how is that? But it's a lot of work, and so I've done a lot of TV to this day.
Remember one of your most ambitious dinner parties that you put together for someone?
Let's
Any standouts from that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a whole book of all the menus, which is fun to look at, and I haven't looked at them in a while. But I cooked a lot different then than I do now as far as the tureens and, you know, the layering of food and the details and the frying of the little garnishes. You know, now people don't want to do that
mm-hmm.
at home, so I don't generally teach that. So I cook a lot differently now, but I was always two desserts, you know, a fruit first and then the chocolate. And
so very classic based on
mm-hmm.
what you have been brought up
mm-hmm.
with.
And
style.
Very much Charlie Trotter style as well. So
mm-hmm.
the French and the Charlie Trotter together was what it was.
Well, why don't we take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the present day.
Great.
And what you're doing these days. So we'll be right back with Chef Courtney Kontos. Welcome back to Cooks and Books, and I'm here with Chef Courtney Kontos, and we'll give you her website. It's www.chefkontos.com, and she also has a wonderful blog, and we're going to be talking more about that in the next half of the show, and that is chefkontos.blogspot.com. And some of what we'll be talking about today, if you don't take great notes or you're listening while you're moving, you'll be able to look up some of the things we're talking about there. So we're here on the Heritage Radio Network. I want to thank our host, Hearst Ranch, our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, for making today's show possible. So if you were listening earlier in the show, you heard all about Charlie Trotter and Chef Kontos' experiences there, and now I'm hoping she'll share with us a little of how that has evolved into what she's doing today and how people are eating and cooking. What are some of the differences that you're noticing from how people ate even 5 years ago to what they want to do in their kitchen now?
Now I find people are a lot more adventurous with the grains and beans and, you know, cooking the quinoa and the barley, whereas before it was maybe not so familiar to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I have a lot of families that I work with, and they want to eat healthier, and they want to cook greens, you know, and they don't know how to, you know, you read everywhere, eat more greens, but they don't know how to make them taste good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big question I am often getting.
So let's talk a little bit about what, if I were to call you up and I were going to say, all right, I've had it, it's time, you know, I'm not going to eat these Snickers for lunch anymore, I want to eat healthy. How do you begin with someone with that? And how do you do it in a way that they can stick with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not run off to McDonald's for dinner?
Well, generally the people that come to me for culinary help, whether it's a cooking class or meal plans, are people that want to cook and like to cook. So I will help them create menus, you know, whether it's for their lunches or for their dinners or family of four or single or any, you name it. And so we'll create the menus together, and then once those are approved, then I send them recipes and a shopping list. And the fun thing is, once you work with me, I'm your lifelong friend, your chef friend. So I'm constantly getting calls, especially on Thanksgiving and the holidays, where, you know, you have these food emergencies, because they can call me not only about the recipes I've given them and worked with them on, but anything.
Uh-huh.
Because my goal is to really have people cook more and have fun with it. So that's a big big piece right there, is let's cook more and, you know, get out of your rut. You know, people tend to cook the same thing, and their lives are busier, and they just can't figure out what to do to change it. So they'll call me to help create some new recipes that will, you know, they have them in their kitchen, they'll have them forever. And that, what's fun, too, is I recently had a, I've only worked with the wife, and I haven't met a lot of my clients because it's just through the internet, but I've been talking with his wife, and he calls, you know, the husband was making the recipes, you know, she must have been out, and it was his turn, so finally I talked to him and answered his questions on veggie burgers.
Well, what's interesting is that, I mean, who would have ever thought something as tactile, tangible, central as
mm-hmm.
cooking, you could be coaching people through the internet. I mean, who would have
mm-hmm.
thought technology would bring us there?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'd like to distinguish for our listeners a little bit the different things you do, because clearly you go into people's homes, show
mm-hmm.
them how to hold a knife,
mm-hmm.
show them what it means when you say sear or saute. But when you're doing this over the internet or over the phone, How are you, what are you changing about your teaching so that you can sort of get that across?
Well, I've also done web, streaming, so they can see me and I'm in the kitchen and they're on the computer watching, through Skype, and that's really fun. So I can demonstrate a place where they might be stuck and I can show them and they'll watch it.
So you can get sort of this 911 emergency call and someone saying, "How are these eggs beaten enough, right? Is this my egg white the right way?" And you can Skype and then...
Yes. Well, the 911s tend to, I might not have the ingredients that they're calling about. So a lot of the Skype conversations happen pre-planned, like, well, cook what, you want to learn, and then you can watch and take notes and they'll have the recipes to follow. The 911s tend to be, the last question I had was they were buying quinoa in a box where I normally buy it in bulk, and they wanted to cook the whole box. So they needed to know how much cooked quinoa, how much dry equals cooked. So it was a mathematical question.
Oh, okay. So that was a little easier to do without television. So people are wanting more greens. What's a way we could tell our listeners they could make greens? What's a good recipe for...
Well,
tonight they're walking home. They go into the store on the corner of what and what.
Well, I bought collard greens today. Those are some of my favorites. But you've got collards, dandelion, kale. Those are just some of the basics. And it's a bitter green, so I like to add. We are in Vermont, but honey would work too. But maple syrup. So you have your washed, chopped greens, and they're still a little bit damp. And you have a nice big pot. You put a little bit of oil in there. It's heating up. You add your greens. It'll make some noise, sizzle, put the lid on. They'll wilt down. Take the lid off. Add equal amounts of maple syrup and apple cider vinegar. And, we're talking just a couple tablespoons, depending on how many greens. And salt and some chili flakes. Put the lid back on. Turn your heat up because there's moisture is going to, come out of the kale or the greens. And within 6 minutes, depending on, how you like them cooked, they're done. And you have your four basic flavors now in perfect balance. And you'll taste it, and maybe you want to touch more maple syrup or a little bit more acid. So you have your sweet, sour, salty, and bitter.
Bitter.
Yeah.
And then where does umami fit into that?
Sometimes that's more advanced for my folks. Sometimes,
Well, I sort of wonder if when something tastes good and is balanced, isn't that almost umami in a way when you get those four in place? And then with the grains, I think those can be a little intimidating. What do you think is the reason grains are emerging? And I've got two questions, actually. Why do you think they're more popular? And also, they seem to take so much time, and what are some hints for how to have them prepared?
Well, the reason we're seeing them more, I think, well, there's probably a lot of reasons, but one is the heirloom varieties are coming back, and you're seeing them in stores. Maybe they're showing up in your CSA.
For example, what's an heirloom that we might
like an heirloom, like a cranberry bean. That one's really popular. Some of these black beans, these heirloom little black beans, we have here in Vermont, anyways, in our CSAs. But the other reason is health. We're all told to eat better, and grains are, the key to that. Less, less fat, less saturated fat. So quinoa, I just made quinoa a couple days ago. You all hear about quinoa, the super grain of the future.
Exactly.
Eight amino acids. So, I make quinoa, and then I turn some of it into tabbouleh. And then there's some left over, and I might garnish a soup with it. And then the other part left over, I'll turn into veggie burgers. I tend to eat really healthy at home. Let's just say not always, but maybe during the week. I definitely, we have, indulgence
on the weekends.
It's up and down, up and down, up and down. But we every other meal, we're cooking grains, and it's very healthy. So,
and you cook
them
in water?
In water, yep.
Yeah,
And it's really simple, and they'll hold up for days. I mean, you can put them in your Caesar salad, toss some quinoa. But there's just, I make these veggie burgers with pinto beans, and you can fold the quinoa in, and they hold together. And it's so healthy, and it doesn't need to be refrigerated for lunch, and the kids like them. So that's just one of the recipes that I've been sharing with people a lot. But lentils, Uh-huh. You know, you can have them one night Indian, you can have them the next night Mediterranean with tomatoes and feta cheese and caper berries. And, you know, then you can have a Moroccan. So you can take these grains and just throw different flavors, uh-huh. different spices, you know, divide them into three.
So you sort of cook a big pot of something, mm-hmm. and then you divide it up, and you can season mm-hmm. it differently.
Exactly.
And then you feel like you're having something
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be, so now folks wanted to find you. How would they find you if they want to get some of this advice on their own? They'd go to chefcontos.com.
Mm-hmm. On my website, there's if you click on the culinary services link, there is a phone number. You can call me. And then there's an email available, too, there.
And that way, and you can work with people who are anywhere. Keep mm-hmm. in mind, though, that Chef Contest is on the East Coast. And so if you're calling from the West Coast, you want to be a little bit mindful of when that call might be coming in.
Mm-hmm. So cooking classes, I offer those in people's homes, and then helping with meals and recipes. I've had brides contact me for their registry, and they want to, you know, design their new kitchen, what pots should they have, and so that's a whole other category. And, yeah, I think that's it.
Pretty much anything,
mm-hmm.
too. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about, too, because of the kind of work you're doing, is how we're seeing food used for team building. You know, how there's this,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of corporate and organizational folks who
mm-hmm.
now are finding that. And there was that great movie, Hitch, I don't know if you ever saw that,
mm-hmm.
where there's a great scene where they go do one of those culinary evenings together with her boss. But I wondered if you had developed something like that or just how you felt about the role mm-hmm. of preparing food and how it can be used in that way.
Oh, it's fabulous. I've been teaching culinary team building for 8 years.
I didn't realize that.
And it's the biggest hit. You just can't believe it. The people might walk in and they'll be a little nervous, but they, in the classes I've taught, they receive a chef hat, they put their apron on, they work in groups, sometimes groups of four. It will depend on, you know, what the, you know, leader or, you know, group manager has planned for them. But it's great, you know. They get around food and something just softens. And there is a competitive piece as well. You know,
uh-huh.
someone's going to win, there's judging. But the team buildings that I have taught, it's almost an Iron Chef. There's a basket, there's a table, there's, you know, if they're going to make a salad, they're going to have 10 different vinegars and oils to play with. And I teach them in, you know, within a minute or two, this is how you make a salad dressing. There's a, you know, ton of different vinegars and oils and mustards and sweeteners and herbs, and now everyone make their own, and someone will win that. And then, I've seen, you know, I did an Iron Chef recently, and they were so into it, this one group, that they were stealing the garnishes off the hors d'oeuvre platters in the other room.
Because they didn't want the other team to win.
Yeah, and they just were doing anything to make their plates look pretty because they were judged on presentation as well. So they're going and they're grabbing, you know, cheeses and little edible flowers, and good for them. So
the goal when someone calls you for that is, someone will call you up and they'll say, I mean, is there a problem they want to solve or just, I just want to give my group
right.
something to do out of the office together.
That's it. Generally, it'll tie in with their conference or a full-day event
uh-huh.
that they already have going on. Maybe it's meetings all morning, and then they break for a quick lunch. Maybe that's a culinary demonstration lunch, and
uh-huh.
then they'll have a team-building event for dinner. So sometimes it's the fun part of an all-day meeting.
Uh-huh. And that's something good that people could think about.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other question, we're getting short on time, but I wanted to ask you what you're noticing about young people and food. You know, it seems that with the media, I know a lot of folks tell me that their kids watch Iron Chef. It's
mm-hmm.
now entertainment for them. What are you noticing different? You know, you had this fabulous resource in your family that you could go to,
mm-hmm.
but so many children don't. And I just sort of wondered what you might be thinking about that. And
well, now I'm seeing more and more children, you know, wanting to cook and take cooking classes. I had a family buy a gift certificate over the holidays for their daughter that wanted to come and cook at my house. So it'd be different, you know, get her out of, you know, their environment, their kitchen. She was 9 years old, and she's the cutest little thing. And, you know, they kept going on and on about all the things she's already made. So, I mean, this was like a semi-advanced class for her.
Wow.
So.
And what would you do in a semi-advanced class?
We made a chocolate lava cake with hazelnuts. So one of those, you know, liquid center, bake it, unmold it, and then we made chicken Milanese, so she pounded it, you know, made a nice breading, and then I think Caesar salad it too, yeah.
Well, you'll probably be getting a lot of emails from folks who want you to come and get some programs with their
I'm ready, but
children.
The kids are fired up, and they know a lot more than we think, just like you said, they're watching the shows.
Yeah. And learning a lot.
They are really, I'm so happy. Isn't that wonderful?
It is wonderful. And I think, and something I hope we can talk about in the next half of the show is a little of the farm to school movement that's going on. And I think that that's probably another reason why they have a greater consciousness. And so for those of you who are listening, Chef Kontos will be joining me again later on this month. We're going to have another show with Chef Kontos where we'll get into some different aspects of what she's been involved with. She just came back from a trip to Mexico where she is still refining her skills. Hard to believe they need any refining, but she finds that she gets inspired and rejuvenated by travel and trying different things. And we'll talk a little bit about ingredients and some things that are going on today and what happens if you do have access through a CSA or a farm program for a large animal and how you might handle that. So thanks, everybody, for listening to Cooks and Books. And my guest has been Chef Courtney Kontos. Our sponsor has been Hearst Ranch, and we're here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Deborah Shapiro, and I hope you'll tune in next time. Thanks so much for joining us.